Hi, I'm Charles Cornell, orthopedic surgeon at Hospital for Special Surgery, doing this interview for Medscape. I wanted to talk today about the legacy of Dr. Philip Wilson. Dr. Philip Wilson died in June of 2016 at the age of 96. He had been in the practice of orthopedic surgery throughout his entire adult life and served as the Surgeon-in-Chief at the Hospital for Special Surgery from 1971 through 1989. One of the focuses of his life was the development of total hip replacement surgery in the United States, modern total hip replacement surgery. And he introduced total hip replacement surgery basically to the United States. He traveled in 1967 to the United Kingdom, worked with Dr. John Charnley at the Ridington Hospital, and learned Dr. Charnley's technique of low-friction arthroplasty and brought that back to the Hospital for Special Surgery, where the first total hip replacement in the United States was performed in 1969. What's terrific about Dr. Wilson is that he was very involved with his patients and followed his cohort of patients for his entire lifetime, actually up until the year that he died. So we have the opportunity to see 40-plus year follow-ups on a large population of patients that he operated on. Dr. Wilson was a wonderful mentor to surgical residents. I happened to be one of his residents in the early 1980s, and then his colleague working at the Hospital for Special Surgery. He approached me in 2013, asked me to help him complete his follow-up study of his total hip replacement patients. So he and I and my colleagues from our biostatistics division sat down with Dr. Wilson and did a very thorough review of approximately 300 patients that he was able to follow for over 40 years. He was very interested in patient care. So he noted that most long-term follow-up studies that had been done on total hip replacement focused on the incidence of revision or on radiographic assessment of the components and the fixation of the components. He was more interested in how patients did and how their lifestyles were improved by the arthroplasty. And so when he began doing this surgery, he developed a hip score, a functional hip score, that became known as the Hospital for Special Surgery Hip Score. And he applied this hip score to his patients over his entire career. So we had the benefit not only of radiographic follow-up, but this clinical follow-up using this essentially rudimentary patient-reported outcome. Patient-reported outcomes now are much more sophisticated than this was, but this hip score formed the basis for many other hip scores, including the Harris hip score, which is very similar and which have been used for many, many years. So we intended to follow this population of hip patients using his data and report on 40-year follow-up. And we felt that the contribution of this study would be that it looked at the patient outcomes and not just a reporting of need for revision or radiographic evidence that the components might be failing. What we found, very interestingly, was that all patients basically experienced a significant improvement in the quality of life and functionality after their hip replacement. When we put the data together and applied survivorship analyses, we found that there were essentially four populations within this cohort of patients. These four groups could be distinguished by their baseline characteristics and by their outcomes. And the four groups included a group of patients that were very old, a group of patients that required bilateral surgery, a group of patients with very complex hip disease that often required multiple revision surgeries, and a younger cohort of patients that had total hip replacement and did extremely well. We also found that when patients over the long term had a hip replacement, they very often experienced significant improvement in outcome, as I've already mentioned. If the hip began to fail for whatever reason, that outcome could be that deterioration in function could be detected. We also noted that if they had revision, their functional assessment returned back to the baseline after their total hip replacement. So what this emphasized to us is that revision, which has often been considered an endpoint to failure in total hip replacement literature, is probably not an appropriate assessment. This data suggested to us that a patient with a total hip replacement can have a revision and then return to the benefits of the hip replacement for the rest of their life. So in essence, this data suggests that a failure requiring revision is not a failure of the arthroplasty. The patient still benefits from the arthroplasty after the revision, and the revision is essentially a bump in the road or an episode of care that has to be addressed. And so we think this is a new way of looking at arthroplasty, not assessing just need for revision, but looking throughout the patient's life at patient-reported outcomes that occur throughout their lifetime. This is very similar to what's going on in cancer research currently. As I'm sure most of you are aware, many cancers can now be treated so that patients can live long periods of time, either cured, in remission, or with their cancer. And the cancer researchers are now applying statistics that are very similar to this, looking at episodes of care and looking at overall quality of life. And we believe that that's the type of analysis that should now be applied to long-term assessment of total hip arthroplasty. I'm Dr. Charles Cornell, and thank you very much for listening.